WBOI Presents In Session is a new series where we'll hear from teachers, educators, and experts on all sorts of topics, sharing their lessons in the WBOI studios. As part of our commitment to lifelong learning, In Session gives us an opportunity to partner with those who have something to teach us. During this episode, we'll hear from Rebecca Green from WBOI on the topic of journalism. Thank you for listening. Welcome to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. For a little over a year now, I've been a part of an experiment. My background is in music or audio technology and communication, but I have very little experience with journalism. A little over a year ago, WBOI hired Rebecca Green as our news director. Rebecca has years of reporting experience, but no background in audio. So our desks were put right next to one another. And over the course of the last year and some change, we've managed to teach each other a few things, and the experiment has been largely successful. Without any further delay, Rebecca Green is our guest. Welcome to WBOI Presents.
It's so great to be here in this capacity. It's so fun to talk about.
I want to start with a question that probably has two answers, because you went into journalism and then many years later went back into it. So what led you into and back into the field of journalism?
I knew when I was very young that I wanted to be a journalist, probably high school. I'd always been very curious. I've always been one of those annoying people that asks why all the time. Why did that happen? What's going on? Journalism is a very great place to exercise your curiosity. For me, it was a place where I could explore things that interested me and be a part of something that even in high school, I believed was important to the community. I remember watching CNN during the first invasion of Iraq and the Gulf War, just being amazed at the work the journalists were doing, just being there and being able to provide us with immediate real-time information about what was going on. And that's kind of one of the first things I think that kind of struck me. So that's where I kind of remember my interest being piqued a little bit.
So before coming to WBOI, you had 15 years at the Journal Gazette, I guess we could say that was Act One. What made you want to come back into it and have Act Two here at WBOI?
I missed journalism. When I left the Journal Gazette, there were a number of reasons why I felt that the time was right for a change. I didn't leave the profession necessarily. I just kind of felt that I wanted to try something new, and in a very weird way, I was grateful when that something new was short-lived, you know, victim of a layoff, and it worked out very well because then I was able to kind of realize that I missed the profession of journalism. I missed the work. I missed the building of a thing that is important to a community. So when the opportunity came around to get back into journalism through public radio, I was thrilled because public radio does journalism in a different way, but the ethos and the ethic of it are very similar to the ethic of print journalism. It's committed to truth-telling, to accuracy, to unbiased presentation of facts. And I really respected that and had always respected that in public radio. So to me, it felt natural, except for the part where I didn't know anything about radio.
This is WBOI Presents In Session. Our guest instructor is Rebecca Green. And this episode is Journalism, Lesson 1. In addition to being news director here at WBOI, you also teach a journalism class at Huntington University every 2 years, right?
Every 2 years.
So by the time that semester is over, what is one thing or perhaps several things that you want to make sure are ingrained in each and one of your students' heads when they leave?
The number one thing is I want my students to understand that journalism, the press, is enshrined in the Constitution for a reason. One of the things that I have always told them, and I emphasize even more now, that when societies transition from closed to open, the first thing to appear is a functioning press. It might be underground, it might be pressed in some way, but there is a desire by the citizenry to freely exchange information about the goings on in their government. When a society transitions from open to closed, you start to see that practice hampered by government activity. So one of the things I think our founders wisely understood was that there needed to be a mechanism for the men and women who lived in the United States of America to gather and share information about the government of the United States of America from the top down. And it's right there. You know, Congress shall not abridge the freedom of the press. So press should never be hampered by the activities of government, by the intentions of government. And I think whether or not our press is functioning in the way it should is, you know, kind of a different topic. But we have a free press enshrined in the Constitution. And I think the reason for that is because journalism as a practice is important to the function of a free society. So one of the things I teach an advanced news writing course, and I want them to understand that the act of gathering information and putting together a story, whether it be for print or for broadcast or just for a blog post, that act of gathering information, gathering the best information, compiling it into a usable story, a usable other piece of information for consumption, is necessary. So we talk about the importance of it, and then I want them to understand the ways in which we go about that, and the ways in which how we go about that is enhanced and strengthened by our ethics.
You've mentioned ethics a couple of times, and it really is impossible to have a conversation, a good conversation about journalism, without referencing the trust that's placed in journalists in some way, shape, mm-hmm. or form.
Yeah, there are actually codes of ethics. The Society of Professional Journalists has codes of ethics. There are codes of ethics all over the place in journalism. And that code, that this idea of being an ethical reporter, is based in the fact, the reality that we are the eyes and ears of the community in an event, at an event, in a meeting, in a courtroom, in wherever. So when I, as a beat reporter at the Journal Gazette, if I found myself at a homicide scene, I was the eyes and ears of Northeast Indiana at that homicide scene. They weren't going to be able to be there. So it was up to me to get the information that we needed for them to form an understanding, not just an idea, but to try to understand what occurred. If I covered a civil case that was really complicated, I took the time to read those documents because I had access to them. Most people did not. And so it was my job as a reporter to accurately convey the information, to interpret that information in a way that was based in reality. If I didn't know what something meant, I found somebody to explain it to me. NPR, we trust Nina Totenberg to cover the Supreme Court because we can't be there. I would love nothing better to spend my day sitting in the Supreme Court and listening to argument about these cases that determine how our democracy does or doesn't function, but I can't be there. But I know that because NPR pays Nina Totenberg money to go sit there day in and day out and build those relationships and learn about the law and learn about how that place functions, so she can say, this you need to know. We know this is what you need to know because we were there. And that, as a journalist, we have only our reputation. And as a journalist, we better protect that reputation. And you protect that reputation by being as careful with the information as you can be, by being as thorough with the information as you can be, and being as understandable in your presentation as you can be.
You are causing me to think back to when you first started here, some of our earlier news meetings. One of the things you referenced was the simple fact that you can't unring the bell. Once you've put a story out there, it's out there. And we talk about, often during fund drives, that NPR prioritizes getting the story right, not getting it out there first. Perhaps we won't go as far back as ringing of the village bells, but just in the time that you have been a journalist, given how many ways that the medium has changed just in the internet age, what aspects of journalism have changed with that, and what elements remain rock solid, remain the same?
So the ethic remains the same, the exact same. But the pressure, the need to be careful, but you have to be careful quickly. You know, when I would make an error in the story 20 years ago, our readers saw it. We corrected it the next day, and that was it. When you make an error now in print or on the web, you might be able to fix it, and you can easily fix the, you know, the digital content, right? You can, oops, that name's misspelled, and we fixed it, but you can't retrieve it from broadcast. You can't correct the information that may have been shared in a tweet based on that. You can't recall the mistake. And if you did it quickly, right, if it was something important, the impact of that error is probably greater. So we went from having, like, you know, just a rock in a pond to like a boulder in a bucket. So, you know, this a mistake in a big story now is harder to clean up. And because people are now looking for a reason in which the media isn't doing its job, when you make a mistake now, there's a lot less forgiveness on the part of the consumer to give you a mulligan. If you make a mistake in breaking news and then that's corrected in other subsequent reports by other outlets, you've really dented your reputation and the reputation of the organization that you represent. And so, you know, we talk about what I tell my students. One of the things I always say is that it's better to be second and right than first and wrong.
Thinking with the mindsets of a news or a media consumer for a moment here, if something is wrong, if something happens to potentially damage that trust you have in a particular source that you're pulling from, then you do have other options. There are so many media options available now. But one thing you and I talked about before we started our conversation today is that many of those options that keep popping up aren't local. There really isn't a replacement for local news, which has also changed a lot, again, just in the last 20 years.
And I think that, so there's two things at play here. We have the proliferation of sources about all kinds of information. How many true crime podcasts do we have now? How many, you know, arcane topics of conversation can I find a newsletter on or a blog on or a podcast on? So we have access to all this kind of broad stuff. In some ways, media in general has spread out, but in the ways that matters for the functioning of your democracy, media has constricted. The phenomenon of newspapers shrinking newsrooms or shutting their doors, newspapers being purchased by chains that just basically farm out content, you lose that uniqueness and the needs of that community. So when your newspaper goes from a newsroom of 35 people to a newsroom of 10 people, that means that there are things locally that are not being covered. So that trust that the newsroom, the newspaper, or the radio station or the TV station has said, I will be at this meeting because you can't be, they can't be there anymore. So now no one is there to tell you what occurred and why it occurred. The former U.S. attorney in New York, Preet Bharara, was lamenting some of the changes at a New York City tabloid a few months ago. And one of the things he mentioned was how many investigations he knew that his office and the local FBI office had pursued based on coverage they had seen in that local paper. And I know that there were colleagues of mine at various newspapers at which I've worked that their coverage of issues prompted criminal investigations or civil liability. And it's not to say that there's not other ways that those things can be discovered, but it sure is harder to discover them if nobody's there watching. And I think one of the things that we have to understand about the role of the American journalist is that they are paid observers for you as a consumer and a voter and a citizen of the United States. So they are assuming a role that you cannot assume for yourself, even in this era of information, because they're willing to not just look at the agenda, but look at the people on that agenda and maybe ways that they have contributed to a campaign that may influence the decision that that city council makes that might affect your tax dollars or your quality of life. You can certainly do that on your own, but you have to know that you have to do it. And I think with the constriction in media, the constriction in journalism particularly, we have endangered ourselves in some very real ways, and ways that we will see eventually in higher taxes, higher costs, because things aren't done as above board as they should be.
So we've already hit on the importance of local newsrooms that now are not as large as they once were, and the responsibilities that journalists have, and just all the different things that they have to unpack, from sources to facts and opinions and just all these different ideas, and also just the research and the legwork that comes with putting together a good story or content or all the different words that I've just used. There's a lot there. So why don't we go through and define some terms here, just to have a deeper understanding of what journalists are doing and what they're putting together when they present a story to an audience.
Every lion is a cat, but not every cat is a lion. So you have, you know, every news story is content, but not all content is news. And I think one of the problems with the way media in general, not just journalism, but like social media and entertainment media, all of the media that we consume, is that we need more content. Content, you know, to fill a screen, to fill a block of broadcast time. And the problem is now we often lump news into content in a way that is not honoring to news. News is news, and content is not necessarily news. So when we are doing a story, Barb's putting together a feature right now on a new program in the courts, that's not content. It will become content when it's on our website and we broadcast it, but it's news, and it's purposed beyond just filling a space in the on the page or filling a block of time. And I think one of the things that happens when you kind of diminish news as news and it becomes content is that it becomes easy then to write it off. Content can be news, but content isn't always news. Content can be an advertisement. Content can be a testimonial that looks like an advertisement. Content can be opinion. Content can be news. And I think we need to, as consumers, understand the difference.
So even as we go through our own work in our own newsroom to put together a story, to put content on our website, to broadcast things over the air, even when media does this work, it doesn't mean it's going to reach an audience that necessarily wants to hear it. And more than ever today, as there are so many options for news consumers, we then have the option to curate. Mm-hmm. And we can go through and turn on the station when we want to, turn it off when we want to, figure out what channel we want to have our TV set to, and figure out more than ever what items, what stories pop up in our newsfeed. And things now more than ever might look like news that actually aren't.
There's a quote, you know, you're entitled to your own opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts. And I think part of the problem right now is that we as consumers are no longer seem to be mature enough to handle opinions. And by the opinions, I don't mean our opinions, the opinions of others. We equate others' opinions, we put them all in that fact bucket, and anything that goes against our opinion, we tend to reject out of hand. And I think that's something that people are probably going to study and write books about, but it concerns me because we're not giving ourselves the best opportunity to make the best decisions about the lives we live.
Rebecca, thank you so much for being a part of the inaugural run of our WBOI Presents In Session series. I hope we can do this again soon.
I hope so too. It was a pleasure to talk to you about journalism, Ben.
And thank you for listening to WBOI Presents In Session. You can find more episodes of WBOI Presents In Session at WBOI.org. And while you're there, you can find the very latest from the WBOI news team and stay up to date on content we produce year-round. Our theme music is by Noah Campodonico. Our sound effects are by John Dawkins. Our WBOI intern is Brandon Williams. Thank you for listening.